radioalbion.com.
Well, that's the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines and corner scenes to footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
Hello and welcome to the Radio Albion Roundtable. Today's date is Monday the 3rd of August 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Yes, it's that time again. It's time for a Radio Albion Roundtable, which means that I have with me today Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org and Grandpa Lampshade from the Church of the Lampshade. Matt, how are you doing today?
Well, I've been in a very good mood. Our people need to get their backs up off the wall, as I said before, and some of these stories will be explaining that in some detail.
Yes, well, I'm in a good mood today because I've got both of you here. Grandpa, how are you doing today?
Oh, man, it's an all-star lineup, isn't it? We've got network manager extraordinaire in yourself there, Sven. We have a geopolitical expert extraordinaire in Dr. Johnson, and me, just comes up with random stuff that I think is kind of funny. So I'm not sure where I fit in all of that, but yeah, no, it's an all-star lineup. It's going to be a good time. Looking forward to it. Always looking forward to it. It's fun to sit down and visit with other people about these sort of topics.
Yeah, it's always good to get together with other Radio Albion hosts and have a general conversation. And we've each got a story that we're bringing to the table today with loosely connected together under the title of Unintended Consequences of Black Lives Matter. Obviously, Black Lives Matter have caused lots of problems, tearing down statues, rioting, looting. But there have also been some positive sides to this. And the first story that I really want to bring up is red-pilled rappers and the fact that we have lots of blacks basically outing the Jews and talking about the problems that Jews have caused for their community, which really was, I really could not have foreseen that was going to happen when Black Lives Matter began. And the one in particular I want to talk about is obviously in Britain. It's a grime rapper called Wiley. But just to remind the listeners of what this comes on top of, this comes after Ice Cube tweeted the banker mural that got Jeremy Corbyn into trouble. That was the mural that had all these bankers playing chess on top of the workers' backs. And it was actually real bankers, but they said it was anti-Semitic because, of course, they were Jewish bankers, because bankers are mainly Jewish. And then he also tweeted a Jewish star with a black cube in it. And, of course, the black cube is a symbol for Satan, according to Islam. And Ice Cube is a follower of Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. And Ice Cube refused to apologize. And then he made a statement that he's not anti-Jewish. He is just pro-black. And that came after the UK Black Lives Matter Twitter account also highlighted the hypocrisy in calling it anti-Semitism when people criticize Israel's actions against the Palestinians. And that was really unforeseen, because the Labour Party had all been getting down on their knees and praising Black Lives Matter, and they suddenly had to reverse all this praise and try and say, oh, we were just supporting the moment, not the actual group. So there's been all these unintended consequences that have happened, but I think the best one so far has been this Wiley character, who I had never heard of before, but apparently he is considered the godfather of grime. Grime is a subgenre of rap music, mainly centered in London. And last year he was awarded the Ivor's Inspiration Award for his work. But on top of that, he's actually been made into an MBE, a member of the British Empire. It's just sort of just one level down from being a Sir Wiley. And the papers have been telling us his real name is Richard Kiley Cowie Jr. And they keep putting that after his name now, the same as they do with Tommy Robinson, real name Stephen Yaxley Lennon, and they're doing the same to this Wiley guy now, putting his real name after everything. Whereas up until now, of course, they've been genuflecting before him and talking about how wonderful he is. And he's now facing major criticism, basically, for a long Twitter rant that he made which included several, quote, anti-Semitic messages discussing the power of Jewish people. The 41-year-old artist spent several hours on social media allegedly making wild and offensive claims. He began his rant, "Listen to me, Jewish community, Israel is not your country. I'm sorry, the Star of David, that's our ting. Some people have gotten too comfortable on lands that don't belong to them." And I think that's based around this idea that some of these blacks have, that they are actually the tribes of Israel, and that Israel, the land, should actually be theirs. It's a bit of a bizarre statement to make. But he continued saying, "There are two sets of people who nobody has really wanted to challenge, hashtag Jewish and hashtag KKK. But being in business for 20 years, you start to understand why. The rednecks are the KKK, but the Jewish people are the law. Work that out." And then he said, "If you work for a company owned by two Jewish men and you challenge the Jewish community in any way, of course, you will get fired." And of course, that is exactly what happened to him. Wiley's Jewish manager, John Wolf, promptly proved him correct and dropped him from his management company, saying, "To be very clear here, I do not support or condone what Wiley has said today online in any shape or form." If he doesn't support or condone what he said, why did he do exactly what he said? Why did he prove him correct? If he doesn't support what Wiley said, why did he prove him correct and drop him from the management company? He said, "I am a proud Jewish man and I am deeply shocked and saddened. But what he has chosen to say, I am speaking to key figures in my community in light of today's tweets." So he's basically saying he's going to speak to all the key members in the Jewish community and they're going to go for this Wiley character. It's just proving what he says correct. He says, "This behavior and hateful speech is not acceptable to me." And I went and had a look at his Twitter feed, and it was full of all these things about Jews on there before they removed some of it. Wiley later rejected the charge of anti-Semitism, saying, "Forget anti-Semitic, racism is racism, and you can't hide the fact that systemic racism exists and it wasn't set up by us." And he's sort of implying there that it was set up by the Jews. After being banned from Twitter for a week, he then took to Instagram to continue, saying, "Jewish people are just too touchy." And lest we think this is, you know, this is just a storm in a teacup and it's just happening on Twitter, the UK Home Secretary, Priti Patel, she got involved. She demanded answers from the social media giants over why it took them so long to remove his remarks. Labour frontbencher Joe Stevens added, "Why haven't Twitter and Instagram removed Wiley's accounts despite them being full of vile anti-Semitic content?" We actually had loads of Jews that went on strike for 2 days because they said his content wasn't removed from Twitter fast enough. It should have just gone straight away. Anything critical of Jews has to be removed straight away. And there are now also calls for the 41-year-old rapper to be stripped of his MBE after in one tweet he said, "I don't care about Hitler, I care about black people." And that must have been seen as the most offensive tweet of all, because when they carried this as headline news on the BBC, that was the tweet they were focusing on. The fact that he said, "I don't care about Hitler, I care about black people." So what they're implying there is that you shouldn't care about your own people. It should be more important to you to be hating Hitler and supporting Jews than supporting your own people. I mean, I was just in fits of laughter watching this, and he was so shocked by it. He was saying, you can't get me criminalized for this. You can't call the police. All I'm doing is criticizing Jews, because of course he's used to his black privilege. He's used to be able to say whatever he feels like about white people, and now he's trying to do the same about Jews. And he's had a real shock. He really has. And I'll just stop here. There is more to this, but I'll just throw it up for the comments here. What do you think about this, Matt? I've spoken a little bit about this before with Grandpa, but what do you make of this, Matt?
Well, this isn't necessarily anything new. It's just now has a sharper edge to it. Blacks have, especially blacks in entertainment, have always been very concerned with the Jewish question. My problem here, of course, this guy comes from the black supremacist point of view. That sort of like, you know, Christian identity, although with blacks rather than white Europeans. But otherwise, this is typical Nation of Islam kind of stuff. We've been dealing with this for a long time. Rappers have been talking like this, especially over the last few months. I've been following a few. There's one football player and one NBA, former NBA player talking like this. You know, there's always been one group of people I never had any problem talking about the Jews with, and that's black Americans. They're very easy to talk about that topic with. had a lot to do, I think, with the inner city, Jewish ownership of the stores, getting evicted, getting kicked out of stores and things like that. So there's really, you know, it's just getting sharper and louder here. But it's hilarious to see that this guy says, if you work for a Jewish company and you criticize him, you'll get fired. Well, he works for a Jewish company. He criticized them. He got fired. This has happened a few times before. I guess these people don't have any sense of irony. And then, of course, the Home Secretary is saying the big problem that I think – is it a she, the Indian? Is that a woman?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't pay any attention. That she said the big problem is that he didn't get kicked off fast enough. Now, I just wonder if some of the other – like Instagram – recognize that in getting rid of him, it would be simply proving his point. Although I think my favorite thing he says here is that racism wasn't set up by us. Now, we all know systemic racism is a laughable myth. It exists only against whites. At the same time, though, saying that, you know, this regime was not set up by us, he does seem to imply it wasn't set up by whites either, and certainly not poor middle class whites. I don't know exactly what he means here, but, you know, he's not the most articulate guy in the world, thinking that blacks own the Middle East or whatever he implied there. You know, this is what you would expect from a rapper. My least favorite part of this is he got the MBE thing, which, you know, is ridiculous. And I don't know, have they stripped him of that yet? Are you aware of this?
I don't think they've stripped him of it yet. It's just so bizarre, isn't it? For services to rap music, for services to grime music. But don't you forget who it is that got you that MBE. Once you start criticizing the Jews, that's it. You'll be stripped of all of it. Grandpa, what do you make of this? You're well up there on the rappers, aren't you? You know all about the black rappers.
yes, I am. I'm deep in the rap community. No, I of course there's several takeaways. Y'all have already pointed them out here, but you know, you have the lack of self-awareness. You know, a guy comes out, we talked about, like I said, we kind of talked about this briefly. We talked about this, touched on this topic a little Friday on, the Daily Nationalist, you know, and it's like, it's kind of like the Jews should hire, like a PR person to manage this for him, you know, and be like, no, don't shut him down. That'll kind of prove the point. You know, and it is, you know, because when it happens to regular people, nobody pays attention. You know, when one of us gets booted off of social media or things such as this happens, I mean, you know, people who follow us or whatever, they're aware of it, but it's not a big deal. This person is a celebrity, I assume, here in Britain. And so a lot of people notice. And when these celebrities make statements like this, and then it happens, even I have to think that even the most brain dead normie is sitting there going, well, wait a minute, doesn't that pretty much prove his point? And of course, yeah, they're involved in the entertainment industry, so of course they're going to be very much well aware of this. And I don't even understand why the Jews get worked up about this. I mean, they have articles. We've all seen articles from Haaretz, you know, from Jewish media in Israel, where they openly brag about, yeah, we control Hollywood, we control the entertainment industry. It's not like this is a secret. And yet somebody points this out, and they go off the deep end. But I think the really, really big part here that really sticks with me isn't the way the Jews just knee-jerk go off and do this, because they can't help it. They always do that. Even though you sit here and scratch your head and say, well, you're proving the guy's point. Why are you doing that? That doesn't make any sense. But we all know they do that. I mean, they just can't help it. They just do it. It's just in their DNA. It's all I can figure, because logically thinking, it doesn't really make any sense. But what I think is really telling here is you have something that really amounts to a celebrity level of a Twitter dust up. I mean, who cares? But yet apparently everybody cares. You've got politicians, you've got the Home Secretary, people in the government, and they're jumping up and they're stepping in kvetching. I'm telling you what, we can't get this guy booted off fast enough. Why aren't you booting them off fast enough? We need to strip him of his title, which he shouldn't have had in the first place. Anyway, we should get him shut down. Yeah, we're glad he got fired. These are people who are supposed to be representing the people, but apparently they only represent certain powerful segments of the people. And that, I think, is really one of the things that's really telling about this whole story.
It's political interference as well, isn't it, with the Home Secretary going in there. And what he's talking about, it is a bizarre mix of black Hebrew Israelites and the Nation of Islam. I mean, all these rappers and these black celebrities that are coming out with this stuff, it's like a mix of the two. It's like they've got some truth from somewhere, and it's all mixed in with all this other weird stuff and lots of anti-white stuff as well. But the fact that they are actually speaking up about the Jews, I mean, this was not expected when the Jews were promoting BLM. Well, he has now apologized, sort of, saying, "My comments should not have been directed to all Jews or Jewish people. I want to apologize for generalizing, and I want to apologize for comments that were looked at as anti-Semitic." And he then qualified his comment by saying, "But the Jewish community is powerful within the music business. The music industry people that I'm talking about, they are the ones who get to benefit from it. That's what this is all about," he explained. "It's systemic racism from their side. The system and that man and a community of Jewish lawyers have made me feel this way. I'm not anti-Semitic, but they've made me feel angry and upset because they are showing me the systemic racism that they are allowed to use on us. Without generalizing, there is no point saying all Jews. It is just the people I work with in the music and entertainment industry. That's the Jewish community that I have experienced. Slavery hasn't stopped. It's just dressed up in a million-pound record deal." Twitter said on Wednesday it has permanently suspended him over posts, including one which called Jewish people cowards and snakes, and is continuing to assess the situation internally. The Campaign Against Anti-Semitism has said it will be contacting the Cabinet Office to ask for Wiley's MBE to be revoked, and speaking to Sky News, Wiley said he would be willing to give it up as he never wanted it anyway. And this final bit, I mean, this Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, they talk about how they have a sit down for tea with Theresa May and give her instructions, and just the way they can just offhand say, "Well, we'll just contact the Cabinet Office and ask for Wiley's MBE to be revoked." I mean, if that doesn't tell you who it is that has this inordinate amount of influence for the tiny percentage of the population that they are, I just don't know. I mean, he does make some good points here when he's actually making this apology, and he's saying, "Well, look, this is my experience," and that is all he is doing, is just talking about his experience. Matt, you got any comments on what he has to say about the music industry here?
Well, you understand that he's trying to soften what he says by using one of their phrases. He thought this out clearly, and he said, "Well, if I mention systemic racism and say that this Jewish legal authority reminds me of it, therefore they're going to go easier on him because it's just, you know, Jews at least physically appear white. And if he says, well, this cabal kind of reminds me of the white racism everywhere I go, then maybe they'll use that as something positive and I'll redeem myself." So he chooses his words very carefully. Something tells me that's not going to work, because the people who coined that phrase are aware of how nonsensical it is. So it's a clever way to go about it, but I don't think it's going to work.
Grandpa, you got any comments on that and all the general music industry and whether or not Jews do actually run the music industry?
No, well, obviously they do. They talk about it themselves. I didn't even realize this was supposed to be a secret, but yet apparently I guess it is. I don't know. We're not allowed to notice. But no, I agree with Dr. J. I mean, the apology never works. I mean, out of all of these black entertainers who brought this stuff up, Ice Cube has handled it the best, because he just refused to apologize at all. Now, he's probably saved and invested and got enough money that it doesn't matter to him. But he's the one that's handled the best. I mean, he's refused to apologize. They threw a kvetching fit and he was just like, whatever. But the apology, we all know this, the apology never works. That's just blood in the water. And as Dr. J said, yeah, he's tried to soften and try to reframe his words. And he put Najalt in there. You know, well, yeah, no kidding. Nobody's talking about every single Jew on the planet. You know, you're talking about group stuff here. But it never works. That just smells like, oh, well, defeat. Now we can go ahead, you know, because it's never viewed as, oh, well, let me qualify my statements. It's viewed, an apology when you're dealing with these people is always viewed as an admission of guilt. And now they'll just double down on that. And yeah, once again, they just, oh, we'll go to the, how dare you say we're all powerful? We're going to go meet with the Cabinet Office and show you who's all powerful. It's just, once again, it's amazing because it just proves the point.
They just have no ability for self-reflection or how they appear and what they do they? And just to finish this off, today another rapper has been talking about the Jews, Kate Rothschild's ex-boyfriend, Jay Electronica. And the Daily Mail asks, what is it with rappers and anti-Semitic rants on Twitter? I mean, it's now got this far. There's that many of them. Electronica blasted in a tweet, Rabbi Abraham Cooper is a coward who lied to our brother Nick Cannon about the history of the Caucasian race. Ask him, does he stand behind the vile teachings of the Talmud? Don't be a coward next time, Cooper, you devil. And the Daily Mail, before it actually says Talmud there, they have inserted the words sacred Jewish text. And then they continue. He then went on to recommend anti-Semitic passages from the Bible to his 373,000 followers. Do you get that? So the Talmud is a sacred text, but the Bible is anti-Semitic. And the actual verses that he quoted were Revelations 2:9, which says, I know thy works in tribulation and poverty, but thou art rich, and I know the blasphemy of them which say they are the Jews, and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. And he also quoted Revelations 3:9. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews, and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before thy feet, and to know that I have loved thee. And they're very important verses, I think, because it does show that the people that are calling themselves Jews, they're not the Israelites of old, and they weren't the Israelites of old way back at the time when the book of Revelation was written. He also adds a couple of other tweets there. He says, P.S. to my Christian family, do you know what the Talmud says about Jesus and his mother Mary? Also, what is a goy? And again, that's things that people should be concerned about, especially if you are Christian, what it says in the Talmud about Jesus and his mother. And finally, he says, please make sure you read The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. It is a must read for these times. And that is quite a famous book. I have to admit, I haven't actually read it. I do believe it is about the Jewish role in the slave trade. Perhaps you may have read it, Matt. What do you make of this? And have you actually read the book? Have you read that? You must have heard of it, The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews.
Well, no. Yes, I've read it. In fact, Michael Collins Piper lent the book to me. We tried to get him at a conference a long time ago, and he wasn't able to make it. I don't know who any of these people are, and I'm proud of that. I don't know whatever happened to songs like Get Down On It and things like that. But now the crap that's coming out, now I don't even know what the hell grime, whatever the heck the genre is. I liked how you pointed out the distinction between the Talmud and the anti-Semitic Bible. But this guy has a lot of followers. Whether I've heard of him or not, it doesn't matter. And that he's putting out this stuff that, you know, are day-to-day knowledge for us, and making it well known. Do you know what the Talmud says about Jesus and his mother? Well, we know that. What is a goy? What is a shishka? I mean, these things are essential. Who knows how many people are going to go look this stuff up now because of this guy. And I have the feeling that the elites will be very upset in promoting a lot of these guys, as they've done in the past. This is becoming a common thing. And as the big names do it, they're all going to start doing it unless they're, you know, somehow paid off or bought off. But citing, you know, Revelations 2 and 3, this is a huge deal. You know, this guy is not entirely illiterate, and with what, almost 400,000 followers. So we'll see. We'll see if the Jews turn on some of these guys, if they promote a new genre, a new group of rappers. I don't know, but it's at least something to put a smile on our face.
He's an ex-boyfriend of a Rothschild girl as well. You know, Kate Rothschild, a very famous daughter of Rothschild's banking dynasty, and this is her ex-boyfriend. Grandpa, have you got any final thoughts on this final tweet that was sent out today by Jay Electronica?
Well, I don't know. We're delving into the land of, instead of D3R, it's going to be J3R, I suppose. But no, I think y'all have pretty much hit it on the head here that this puts information out to a lot of people, and some of those people will look this stuff up and be like, you know, kind of those things that make you go, you know, and start wondering about this. And when you put that against the backdrop of this guy pointing this out, that anybody that criticizes the Jews, especially in the entertainment industry, I mean, their career is going to be over. And then they do that very thing. It really, I think, lends a whole lot of credibility to what he says.
Yeah, we have to give credit to them for this, I think. It is brave of them to do this, and they are doing it out of loyalty to their people, which, you know, has to be commended. Well, Matt, what have you got to bring to the table today? It sounds pretty interesting, the little look that I had at it before we began. Tell the listeners what you're bringing to the table today.
Well, this is an issue that comes up every once in a while, but never to the level of this. The title of the article is that United Nations calls on U.S. police to halt the use of force against journalists covering protests. And that the journalists covering protests in the U.S. should be permitted to do their jobs without fear of attack or arrest. And this comes from the UN Human Rights Office. And this comes just from about a week ago. But worse, it says, and this is a quote, the protests must be able to continue without those participating in them, and also the people reporting on them, the journalists, risking arbitrary arrest or detention, being subject to unnecessary, disproportionate, discriminatory use of force, or suffering other violations of these rights. Again, the spokesperson for the UN Human Rights Council. Now, the point of it all is that apparently the police have gotten wise to the fact that journalists are behind these riots, support them, helped organize them, and cover for them. And because journalists truly believe they're above the law, don't disperse, don't move out of the way, and almost use their privileged status to protect rioters from whether tear gas or rubber bullets or whatever. And ultimately, it comes from the July 1st arrest of Andrew Buncombe, who is the U.S. correspondent of the U.K. Independent. And he was arrested covering the CHOP thing in Seattle. Needless to say, he was extremely positive towards this organization, anti-police and everything else. And when they ordered the group that he was covering them to disperse, he refused. He allegedly identified himself as a journalist, as if that puts him above the law. He was held for 8 hours and then released. As a result of this, the Independent started a group called Journalism is Not a Crime. And they're, you know, the way that journalists offer, go about this kind of thing is they are the very nature of democracy. Liberal rights and everything else come down to them. Now, the Independent article also says more than 70 journalists in the U.S. have been arrested during Black Lives Matter demonstrations. Now, those are rookie numbers. These numbers have to be dozens of others have been injured by rubber bullets, pepper spray, etc. There's a U.S. press freedom tracker at more than 500 reports of journalists being targeted during the unrest in the wake of the killing. Now, what's going on here? It's pretty clear what's happening. They do want to be above the law. You have the UN and numerous organizations saying that they need to be treated completely different than everybody else, no matter what they're doing, that the pen is not mightier than the sword. In fact, they're saying it's weaker. But when these guys created these, you know, they invented the story of George Floyd, they invented, many of these, from Rodney King on, they have covered for these guys. They've lied about them. They've invented stories. They're clearly combatants, so to speak. They're not journalists by any means. Now, in an editorial from July 15th, they're talking about the foundation of Journalism is Not a Crime. And they're talking about the Buncombe issue. And they can't believe that, you know, they have to obey the law. They have to listen to police orders. The fact that saying that they're a journalist doesn't automatically give them immunity to everything, despite where they are or what they're doing. And it's just the pomposity here. And let me quote something here that will make you laugh. The rise of authoritarian nationalist politicians has made things worse in America and elsewhere. The mainstream media are portrayed as part of some evil conspiracy against the people, when the population is pounded with the message that they're being fed fake news by failing unpatriotic titles, and when a president feels at liberty to mock a reporter with a disability, there is something wrong. There is bound to be growing hostility to legitimate journalism. Now, I had to read that three times to get this straight. Just like in the story that you spoke of, these guys, of course, are you know, wrapping themselves in virtue. They're saying that, you know, obviously we're not some kind of conspiracy against truth. And then mention Trump mocking a reporter with a disability, which we all know isn't true. I saw that newscast. I saw that press conference. They invented the story, and that's from years ago. And so they explain how they're not fake news by repeating a fake news story that they invented. Now, the fact that the UN is involved in this strongly suggests that they're all well aware of what a journalist is. A journalist has nothing to do with truth. He has nothing to do with reality. He has to do with inventing stories, something to grab your interest. But he can only grab your interest if he supports the agenda. The press is the reason for these riots. The press is the reason for the disinformation. I don't care what the issue is, but especially what's gone on for the last few months. They're combatants in every way. I don't see these guys complaining about the fact that they're embedded in U.S. military units in the Middle East, where everything they write is censored by the commanding officer. They have no problem with that because they know who they're fighting for. But the assumptions that they are legitimate journalists, the assumption that they speak the truth, the assumption that they are the foundation of any kind of freedom. And I mean, right in these very articles, they'll then go on to talk about police brutality against Black Lives Matter and about how these poor victims are doing nothing but protesting peacefully. And they say this, you know, as they're talking about how awful it is that people don't like the press, that somehow President Trump has such power that he's created a mass wave of hostility against the press. Well, there may be some truth to that. But the press coverage of this stuff over the last couple of months has been so outrageous and has actually cost lives and has caused so much property damage and has given aid and comfort to the scum of the earth who are attacking and killing police officers and innocent people out there, including each other. For them to say now that you know, we are just doing our jobs, and how dare you notice this? And I'm just hoping that that these guys start getting the message. I'm hoping that policemen start realizing that they are the enemy, that they are the cause, mostly the cause for the deaths of officers and attacks on officers. These aren't journalists in any normal sense of the word. The only journalists are us and people like Assange, who we talked about a few days ago, the very same people who they have no problem being in prison. So in these very articles where they're condemning arrests of journalists, they're continuing to promote their propaganda. Now, I don't know if they just believe their own crap, believe their own BS at this point, or if they just realize that they are a major prop to left activism, and any police crackdown on them on those grounds will expose that. So the good news here is that so many of these guys are getting arrested. I really wish they would boost those numbers up. But there's certainly a large number of them, suggesting that these guys are part of the rioting. If they're a legitimate journalist, they wouldn't have been arrested. They're a part of this. But the other thing is that, as we know for some time, the support for the press has collapsed entirely. And part of it is because these guys are coming out and fully admitting that our job is to back and to support groups like this. And the police are our enemy. And I'm pretty sure that the police are aware of this. And I'm pretty sure that either they're doing it for that reason, or they're doing it because these guys are actually literally a part of the movement, both intellectually and physically. So this is, to me, it makes the battle lines even stricter than they already, even sharper than they already are. And right in this one paragraph, they're talking about, oh, we're not fake news, but then we'll repeat some ridiculous story that we invented. They just invented a story just a few weeks ago that Trump had no problem with Russia paying the Taliban to kill American soldiers. One of the dumbest stories. Now, they've dropped that. It's completely invented out of whole cloth. It has no foundation. This is the reason that people hate them. Not because, you know, they're telling the truth about George Floyd. We know they're lying about that. They're getting what they deserve. And that also puts a very large smile on my face.
Well, yeah, I find it really encouraging that the police are going after these journalists. I mean, one of the figures I saw, I think I saw 500 instances. It may have just been 500 instances with these journalists being hurt at these riots. But we know how many times nationalists have been attacked when they go out and protest by the Antifa, and now you've got these journalists going out there and taking part in these protests, and they're being attacked and they're being arrested by the police. And when has the UN ever come out and stand up for Andrew Anglin's rights when they removed his internet from Google search results and removed him from the back end of the internet. You still can't find his website on the mainstream web unless you type the address in. When did they stand up for Alex Jones, another alternative journalist with an entire alternative media news site? When did they stand up for Red Ice, who have been taken off of every single payment processor in the world, so they can't even run their business anymore? Genuine alternative journalists that are putting out an alternative message, and the UN is absolutely silent about it. And then when you get journalists that finally starting to get their comeuppance, the police are finally starting to realize that the source of these riots is the lies that the journalists talk about, then you've got the UN going in there and saying, oh, this has to stop. And I do find it interesting that they weren't just saying that not only the journalists shouldn't be arrested, but the protesters. They're saying the protesters shouldn't be arrested either. I mean, they're still talking about peaceful protests on the television when you look at the news. I mean, it's just rioting and looting. It's windows being smashed. It's things being stolen. Shop owners are terrified. They can't open up their shops. And the UN is saying that the people that are doing that, the people that are terrorizing the people of Portland and Seattle and everywhere else, they shouldn't be arrested for what they're doing. It's somehow an infringement upon their rights to be arresting them. And I've seen a couple of the instances as well where these journalists have been arrested. And it has been, you know, it's exactly as you say. The police have said, right, move out the way. And the journalist has said, I'm a journalist. And the police have said, move out the way, I don't care. And the journalist has said, I'm a journalist. And the next minute, he's been handcuffed and pulled out of the way. And it's all on camera. And it's because they think they are above the law. And the UN is backing them and saying they should be above the law. And again, this is another unintended consequence of a Black Lives Matter that I find particularly delicious, to see these journalists getting their comeuppance like this. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on the journalists getting some of what we have to put up with, basically, but from the side of the police?
Well, I mean, in any of these stories, it's important not to view them in a vacuum, you know, and you, to keep an eye on the big picture and remember that, you know, one thing is connected to something that's already happened and so on and so forth, because they build upon previous narratives. I mean, they always operate on the lie. And so the new lie is usually built upon one of the old lies. And as you were talking about just now, Sven, about the, you know, how they keep saying they're peaceful protesters, but anybody with internet access knows that that's not the case, but they keep saying it anyway. And I was thinking how this is really an extension of what we saw after Charlottesville, when they came out and publicly said that only the people on the dissident right who had a permit and were the only ones there legally protesting, only they could be blamed for all of the violence. And this wasn't implied. They out and out said this, that only the people on the right were responsible for all the violence, regardless of who actually committed it. And they actually said this, and everybody went along with it. And now we're supposed to be shocked that we see, you know, people rioting, burning, tearing stuff down. And by the way, they're not just burning flags now. I don't know if y'all saw it. Now they're burning Bibles. This is totally, you know, a communist movement. But it's an extension. Again, why should anybody be surprised? This is just built upon the other lies that they've told. You know, that quote Dr. Johnson pointed out that was fine. My reaction to that was, orange man bad. My, how original. You know, when people like us talk about these things and we talk about the way it ought to be, but the nationalist community in general, when we get referenced, people get and I guess I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for everybody else. So they get this incorrect assumption, like, you know, if somebody talks about us or our point of view from the nationalist community, they think that, oh, well, those people are against having a free press. And absolutely not. I'm not. I believe that a free press, any legitimate government, should not fear a free press, real journalism. It is part of the intrinsic thing that keeps power in balance, that helps heat off corruption, because man is corruptible. And I don't care what kind of government you set up, you're going to have people are running it. So you're going to have corruption, and a free press is essential in helping keep that in check and keeping people accountable, holding people's feet to the fire. I believe that's why the founding fathers made it a big deal to make sure and highlight that thing. But the thing is here, we do not have a free press in this country. We do not have a free press. These are not journalists. They're the propaganda wing of the communists, as Dr. Johnson's already pointed out. They're actively taking part now. It's not just enough now for them. I guess they feel left out being on the sidelines. It's not enough for him to sit here and spin the story to always make the communists in a positive light. Now they want to join in, and yet they want to be able to, like, oh, here's my magic. My magic medallion here, you know, that wards off being held responsible for taking part in a riot because I'm a quote unquote journalist, but they're not journalists. We all know rank amateurs on the internet are doing more real investigative journalism now than what these people do. These people basically take in talking points from some think tank, some politician's office, sometimes corporations such as Amazon or Google, and they just frame that up as a story. And the really lazy ones, they just take tweets. Now that everybody not a commie has pretty much been banned from Twitter, they'll write whole stories that, and you open the story and there's like an opening paragraph, and then it's just copy pasting rando people's tweets. And this is supposed to be a news story. These are not journalists. They're not journalists, and yet they want to present themselves. They want to pat themselves on the back as being somehow important. Important. I'm a journalist. I'm the media. I'm representing the freedom, but they're not. They're not, and they can't be honest with anybody else about it. And they're certainly not even, I don't think they're even honest with themselves about this, but it's absolutely laughable. They are not a free press. They're not doing journalism. They do hit pieces on anybody that opposes the communists, and they support the communists. They write out fake news. They put out fake news. They get caught on it. But yet, if anybody points that out, you're attacking the media.
How can you have a free press if that you have certain groups that you're not allowed to criticize? I mean, that's the very definition of not having a free press. I find it interesting you brought up Charlottesville there and what happened there. Because, you know, they're acting over here in Britain as if this is a new thing, this pulling down of statues, and it began with the pulling down of Edward Colston. And Charlottesville was about protesting against these statues being pulled down and warning that this was going to escalate from pulling down statues of people to do with the Confederacy to pulling down statues of anybody who is white, anybody who was white from 200 years ago when the slave trade was going, and that eventually it was going to escalate into attacking white people, which is at the stage that we are at now. And also with the Bible burning, I saw that as well, that took place over the weekend. But the protesters at Charlottesville were protesting to warn people about this, to warn people that this is what was going to happen. And nobody listened to them, and they just allowed them to be attacked, and they framed it as if that they were the ones that shouldn't have been there. And if only the Donald Trump had actually listened to what they were saying, none of this would be happening today. But he didn't nip it in the bud. He didn't nip it in the bud when on his inauguration day, when all the Antifa went and rioted and set fire to things. He should have stopped it then, and he didn't. But at least we're getting some positive spin from this now, with journalists being arrested and black rappers talking about the Jews. And you've got something positive as well for us, Grandpa. Do you want to go into your story now?
Well, sure. And what I'm bringing to the table today is shocking, shocking news. Well, it's shocking news if you're blind and can't look at pictures. The Pew Research Center, which is honestly pretty a pretty lefty slanted type of thing, but I thought this was interesting here. Numbers from a recent Pew Research Center survey indicates that almost half of those polled, 46%, who said they attended a BLM protest were white. Only 17% of those who say they attended a protest focused on race or racial equality in the last month were black. Hispanic Americans count for 22% of recent protest attendees, and Asians another 8%. I don't know where the hell they are. I ain't seen any Asians in there. But anyway, Pew Research polls have broken down the makeup of Americans participating in protests or rallies focused on issues related to race or racial equality. These demographic studies show participants not only by race, but by other categories such as gender, ethnicity, partisan affiliation, education, and whether they live in an urban or rural area. About 4 in 10, 41% of those responding to a June poll who said they recently attended a protest focused on these things are younger than 30. City dwellers made up 41% of those who protested within the past month. 42% of participants living in the suburbs. Those living in rural areas counted for 17%. There was a large divide based on political party affiliation, and 79% of those who said they participated in protests focused on racial equality in the last month, identifying with were leaning toward the Democratic Party, while just 17% said they were Republican. And in other news, water is wet. I went on a, you know, of course, the social media I'm limited to these days because I've been long banned from every other form of social media. I'm in Gabschwitz, the internment camp version of social media. But I went on a I went through and just posted up been a week or so ago, picture after picture after picture after picture of these BLM protests, supposedly about Black Lives Matter. And I'm putting captions on, like, where are the black people, though? You know, I pointed out, you know, there's less blacks represented at Black Lives Matter protests than there are blacks in anime. I mean, they're just, you look across, there's just a sea of white faces. Now, they claimed, I looked into these numbers a little bit, and they claimed that the numbers are split evenly between white women and white men. I think that's incorrect. Just looking by the pictures, it seems to be a predominantly white women attending these, but I'll give them that. I'll just say, okay, sure, it's split 50-50. But it's just, this is borne out by photographic evidence. You look at all of these pictures, and I don't care where they're taken. You look at these protests, you look at these pictures, and it's a sea of white faces. It's a sea of white faces going around, and you have just like a sprinkling of blacks. I mean, there's not like there's no blacks there, but I mean, it's a sea of white faces, which makes you one just can't help but come to the conclusion the blacks are just a prop in this thing. The blacks are just being used as the excuse. The blacks are being used as a front man. I think the blacks are being used as represented as a black thing, as a safety measure in case this little commie push for some reason doesn't work out. Then everybody will focus their anger on the blacks, and the little white faces would just skimper out of the way. Now, they point out urban versus others, and I think they're incorrect by separating the suburbs from that. I think you should include the suburbs, because the bottom line here, when you lump the urbanites and people in the suburbs together, literally nobody from rural areas, practically nobody, I guess I should say, from rural areas is participating in any of this. Now, you look at urban areas, you look at the suburbs, and we know it's all these white people. What are we dealing with here? We're basically dealing with a college-age demographic. They probably upper middle, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say upper middle class white people, a lot of young women with daddy issues. And, you know, they've been going to college. Their communist professors have been telling them all of this stuff. And now they get to go out in the streets and they get to like do it IRL. They don't have to study it in the classroom. Hell, some of them are probably getting college credits for participating in some of this. I don't find any of it shocking, but I do find it kind of surprising that they actually broke it down for us here to where we could actually take a look at the information. And in an attempt to avoid monologuing, I'll hand it off to Dr. Johnson. What do you think?
Well, I agree with your initial assessment that water is wet and cows go moo and things like that. My favorite part of this is, but what you're doing, of course, is you're ramming the point home. This is nothing but virtue signaling. It's interesting that 4 in 10 Democrats agreed with the idea that these things are just for people to be permitted to indulge in their antisocial behaviors. When you talk about these polls, people explaining to a pollster why they're there, they're not going to tell the truth. Of course, they're going to paint themselves in the most virtuous colors as humanly possible. We have no idea what their real motivation is. Chances are it's probably completely neurotic. But the one that irritated me almost to the point where I had to laugh, the president of Black Lives Matter in Brooklyn, he was upset about the large number of white people. He felt somehow threatened by this, believing his life was in danger, that he had white allies. Can you imagine the mentality that goes into this kind of a statement? And worse, Beckford says that he fears some of the protesters were white nationalists infiltrating the march. And I guess typical journalists, they invented a story out of whole cloth with no evidence whatsoever, but they invented it so just in case things really do get out of hand, they could say, well, you know, all kinds of white nationalists there stirring up the crowd that they want, because can't wait for blacks to burn down cities. The mindlessness here. And this is one section of this article. I just couldn't, my eyes just glazed over here. Anthony Beckford saying, well, there are way too many white people here and my life is in danger because there are white people who have masks on and are throwing bricks at police. This kind of this is a neuroticism that really I'm not prepared to deal with. We knew that these people are mental cases in every possible way. But this kind of neurotic, bizarre behavior is just so, you know, this is simply a matter of just white people are a danger to me because the press has been saying this since the 1980s. And this has been rammed into his head day in and day out. And and of course, you know, the urban rural divide, the gender divisions, none of this is particularly interesting. But the broader point is that, you know, suburban white kids virtue signaling, pretending to be rebels in an absolutely sacrificeless environment. They know they won't get in any trouble for this. They will get college credit. I'd be shocked if they didn't get college credit for this. And a professor who says otherwise is gone. So the rebels, as they like to call themselves, do exactly what corporate media says, do exactly what the universities say, do exactly what even local governors and mayors say, because that's what rebels do. They know that they're going to be patted on the back for the rest of their lives because of this. And they want to believe that they're somehow sacrificing here. So this article is a good one because it really rams home how bizarrely neurotic these people are. You hear the few blacks in the crowd saying, well, I'm black, therefore I'm being hunted down by police, as if their behavior has nothing to do with police behavior. We've been through this many times, but it's just we see this around the world. We see it in South Korea. We see it in India. They're always the sons and daughters of the elite that are out there doing the rioting. The poor kids on the farm have way too much work to do. I particularly like the rural urban divide. It's very important. People don't really talk about that very much. But when you have 4 out of 10 Democrats saying that this is just a criminal element, I don't know if that means anything. That could be in the margin of error. It could be that you have plenty of Democrats who don't think their party looks very good when they're associated with this. But I really doubt that 80% actually, you know, truly believe this is about racial equality. I think that's just a justification. You can't trust polls like this because it's based entirely on the self-report of the people giving the answers. And of course, you're going to say nothing but the nicest things about themselves. So this is just, it's infuriating. And it just goes to show, you know, what journalists do. They've invented all of these stories. They're the creator of all of this. And they appeal to this so-called rebellious suburban white kid, especially white female, who I think is a general slight majority of the protesters here, if not a little bit more, who thinks that they're becoming wonderful people by doing this.
Well, I think it's hilarious that only 17% of the Black Lives Matter protests are actually black, and the rest are all white. And you were pointing out there that you know, that people have said that there are white nationalists amongst them. There have actually been police that have been blaming all these riots on white supremacists, claiming that it was white supremacists that were in there. And that, of course, the more they say that, the more the blacks that are there are going to get sort of scared of all the white people that are there, and they're going to start thinking that they are white supremacists that are around them, just like the black guy that you pointed out there in the Bronx. It may be that they can use that as an excuse instead of saying, well, you know, this was riots and burning and looting that was caused by communists and blacks. They will try and turn it around and say that it was white supremacists that were responsible. Look at all those faces, all those white faces, which of course is just going to polarize things all the more. And you know, that's really what I was hoping for a month or so back when it was happening in Britain, and then Tommy Robinson said, let's get lots of patriots down into London to defend the statues, which sort of deflected the issue from what was really happening. Because the way I was looking at it, I was thinking, well, you've got a lot of white people there, and you've got these blacks there, and they've been told that there's going to be white supremacists there. We're going to end up seeing the Antifa mistaken for white supremacists and getting beaten up by the blacks. But of course, that didn't happen because the patriots did go to defend these statues. And if they hadn't have done that, you know, there may well have been some set to between the Antifa and the blacks, which would be great to see. We've also had this wall of mums, a load of white women that were going out there supposedly to stand in between the police and the black protesters, of course, because the police just want to kill all the black protesters on site. So they needed to have these white mothers standing in between them. And apparently these white mothers weren't pro-black enough. They didn't actually have black women leading them. So they got two black women to lead them. And then they actually went and registered as a registered charity or something behind these black leaders' backs. So now the Black Lives Matter have completely disassociated themselves from the Wall of Mums. I think they've stopped shy of calling the white supremacists, but they've said that they're not pro black enough. Of course, we are going to see this breakdown between black and white at these protests, because fundamentally we are different people, and the blacks are not going to trust the whites. And these white liberals that are there, they are there out of a sense of white supremacy, out of a sense of thinking that they are better than these blacks in some way, they've privileged in some way, and they can use that to help them. It's like this sort of reverse supremacy that we see with these liberals that are always trying to do whatever they can to help the blacks and make special whatever it is for them. Changes for them so that they can get into these jobs and what have you, so they have lower standards. I think we've got the solicitors, one of these solicitors groups, lawyers groups in America, that have said that they're going to lower the exam results so that they can get more black people in there. And what is that saying? Is it saying that blacks aren't capable of actually passing the exams? They're not bright enough to pass the exams. And who is it that's saying that? Well, it's these liberal solicitor types that are saying this. But it is very interesting that only 17% of these Black Lives Matter riots are actually black. A part of that as well, I think, could be that they're thinking, well, look, we don't want to be associated with this. We do not want to be getting the blame for all of this. And I'm sure there must be sensible ones there that are saying, well, look, white people have actually done a hell of a lot for us, and we're actually very lucky to have what we have. And no, we don't want to be involved in this. And there are blacks that say things like that, like the radio host that came up with White History Month. And there are others that you know, speak the truth and say, actually, American blacks are the luckiest blacks in the history of black people, with everything that they have been given. Anyway, we're coming up to the end of the show now, and I'll just hand it back over to you, Grandpa. Is there anything else that you want to bring up? Anything that sort of rises to the surface from these three news stories today that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I think something really important that should be highlighted here is what we were talking about in the previous story about the journalisms and how they just make up things whole cloth, and y'all have touched on it here with this story in reference to white supremacists are infiltrating the Black Lives Matter movement. And we've seen, this is a classic example of the media just absolutely whole cloth making crap up when there is rioting, because they know at some point people see, even people look at pictures, and they can't deny that they're burning stuff down and have this rioting, and they made up this thing, this whole was the Boogaloo Boys. What in the hell is that even supposed to be? It just became a thing. I remember there were, what, a couple years ago, there were people, you know, there was a meme about, yeah, when the Boogaloo starts. Yeah, but it was just a stupid meme. There is no, as far as I know, there is no organization known as the quote unquote Boogaloo Boys. And all of a sudden the media has made up this white supremacist Boogaloo Boys thing, and they're sneaking in. And when you see, when your lying eyes do actually show you rioting and burning and looting, and that it's not a peaceful protest, well, that too is it's the white supremacists doing. It's not the Antifa people that you see running around out there. It's not all those. They're white, so they must be white supremacists. They're secretly Boogaloo Boys that are the narratives. The crap the media makes up just gets more and more absurd. It just gets more and more stupid, because again, they build this thing. The new narrative is built on the old narrative, and they're all lies. So, okay, well, we're telling people these are peaceful protests, but I mean, at some point we can't deny the fact that these things are happening. People are being murdered. People are being assaulted. Property is being destroyed. What do we do? How do we present this narrative? Well, let's create this group called the Boogaloo Boys, and we'll say they're actually white supremacists who are sneaking into the sneaking into the protests, and they're the actual ones doing the violence again. And to go back to the previous point, tying it into Charlottesville. Oh, only the people on the dissident right are responsible for all violence, no matter who actually committed it. So as an extension of that, now the apparently dissident right white people are responsible for the violence of the left, even if they're not there, even if they're not there at all, you're still responsible for all the violence that the left commits.
I think Boogaloo, didn't it come from Breakdance 2, Electric Boogaloo, some 80s video? But yeah, I know nothing about this apart from it just becoming a thing with the journalists talking about Boogaloo or Boogaloo boys. Apparently, people wearing Hawaiian shirts, they've got a special uniform. So I guess these agent provocateurs, FBI, special agents, all of that, I guess they go out there dressed in Hawaiian shirts and try to attract people that really don't know anything about nationalism, but just see this stuff in the mainstream press and think that's who they should be joining. We've also had it over here. Quite a few BBC programs have mentioned these Boogaloo boys and saying that people are being presented, if they type in Boogaloo, they get offered lots of weapons on websites like Amazon, all sorts of weird stuff. It's got nothing to do with genuine nationalism at all. It's a completely manufactured meme, as you were saying, Grandpa. Matt, have you got final thoughts on the subjects that we've covered today?
Well, at least there's some things to laugh about here. There are a few things that are funny. If you remember, it was not that long ago, I think it was 4chan who put up the OK symbol, allegedly as a white symbol. It was a joke, of course, but the press immediately took it, ADL, SPLC, put it we got all serious about it, made it, you know, they have it in their pamphlets and everything. It's completely invented by us. We can play these people very easily. They're so gullible and they're so ignorant. But you know, all of these issues come down to the press. All of these issues come down to the fact that journalists decide what is real and what isn't, what is true and what isn't. And I do think, I think maybe Grandpa's right that they do come to believe this stuff because they're surrounded by it all day. They hear it constantly. The repetition ends up really convincing themselves that not only is this all true, but they're the guardians of it. And without us, you know, it would be a Trump dictatorship and we'd be, you know, Italy in the 20s. And they really believe this. But you know, whenever you feel stupid, whenever you feel like you've made a mistake, just think that there are people out there who really believe this. They really buy this stuff. Guys in Hawaiian shirts throwing rocks at white businesses, screaming Black Lives Matter are actually white supremacists. Can you know, the level that these people have descended in order to function here. But more seriously, every issue that the left has promoted over the last few years has collapsed entirely. Everyone has been exposed very easily as a total fraud. And now that the truth about George Floyd has come out, and yeah, the entire thing is that their entire world, is fraudulent, is make believe. And if it wasn't for the press, if it wasn't for the media, it would have fallen apart a long time ago. The only thing that holds the left together are these journalists that, thank God, are being treated as they deserve.
Well, that's why it's so important that we have an alternative media. You know, it's important what we do here at Radio Albion, and we talk about a different viewpoint on these things, and we talk about the things that the mainstream media don't want to talk about. That's why it's so important that we do have alternative media. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We should be back with Real Britannia next week, and until then, of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.
Well, that's the round table. We're done.